It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 328. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me suggestions for future show topics or, and I'm going to talk about some future show topics, or any technical question. And I have a stack of mail. I promise, I know I'm only going to get a little bit to tonight, but I will eventually catch up. It's going to take some time. But please keep sending them. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. Voicemail, hotline, the phone number, and I have a voicemail for tonight. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that is Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can visit the wiki. That's mtswiki.com. Lots of great info and links to all the archives. Also, you can follow me on Twitter so you know when I'm going to be live. Tonight, I'm recording 2 hours early because I have some commitments tonight. I have some consulting to do. I don't want to miss any recording time, so move the time up a couple hours. So thank you, everybody, who's joining me live on Ustream. And that Twitter account is twitter.com/MikeTechShow. And that's where I will tweet when I'm going to be recording and when I'm like co-hosting Computer America this Monday night, which is a rare appearance on a Monday night. Carrie emailed me yesterday and said, hey, can you join me for both hours to co-host? I said, absolutely. I am free Monday night, so you can listen to Carrie and I. And that is October 25th, Monday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern time. So go to computeramerica.com and you can join in the chat live. And of course, they have the archive, so you can always catch it after the fact. Not a problem. I have a lot to cover tonight, so I'm going to jump right in and start with updating you on a few things. My camera problem a couple months ago, you may recall, I had some real issues with this purple on the lens and even on the viewfinder, and every picture was coming out. And I really didn't know what was wrong, so I called Fuji, and they were very terse but very nice. They said, just go online, fill out a form, and then just mail it back. Just send the camera back to them. So I filled out the form and packed it up really nice in its original box, made sure it was, nice, took it to UPS and made sure that I got a tracking number. I seen that they received it in a couple days, and then I just waited. And then all of a sudden, I got an email saying, hey, we received it, and we are working on the camera. So I was like, cool. Just the other day, I got the camera back. So they sent me another email saying, we are shipping the camera back to you. Now, I think it's the same serial number. So I don't think they replaced it, but it certainly was just a little different, that they definitely wiped everything to where it had to be reset again, you know, for language and for date and time. But it is fixed. It is 100%. And it's so nice to have a camera that I paid, a little decent money for. And I was able to get it back all repaired. And I was very happy. It takes time, so you have to have patience. But if it's under a year old, which buy-in was, and I tell you, I bought mine from Amazon. This problem occurred right out of the box. Don't do what I did. I waited months and then contacted Fujitsu. If you get something from Amazon and it is defective or there's a problem, just go right online and send it back. They are so good at responding back. Great little story. Ryan, my son, wanted a skin for his iPhone. And he wanted a Flyers skin for Philadelphia Flyers. So he was excited. He got the envelope and he ordered it from Amazon. And of course, he used my link when he went to purchase it from miketechshow.com. And when he got it, he said, boy, this is awfully thin. So he opened it up, and it was a sticker. I mean, a sticker to put on your iPhone. It was not a real skin to go around it, like maybe rubber or something, that even plastic. I said, look, go online and return it. Not only was he able to return it, they said, just leave it in the door and UPS will come pick it up and they will put a tag on it. So we just left a note, UPS picked it up, and in a couple days, he got a full refund. I've had to return items, not many, which is nice, but the camera, the minute it started showing that, I got distracted and I didn't return it. The good news is that even though I didn't return it, I dealt directly with the manufacturer. They honored the warranty. They fixed it. That's all I can ask for. But just remember your rights. And when you buy something, even Newegg, any of the major reputable online companies, they are very good at customer service and making sure that you're satisfied and it's easy to return. And it's a pleasure dealing with companies like that. Big plug for Amazon, and it's not just because I get a commission when you use my link on the website. They really come through. The server that I obtained from my client, I redid it with Small Business Server 2008, and I am building notes so you can look for a show down the road on SBS 2008. Of course, I will invite Winston to participate in that show, and I know he'll love to do that. But upon my installation of Small Business Server 2008, I realized, you know, SharePoint Portal is included, and that is something I want to explore. It's also a promise I made a long time ago of having a roundtable discussion where I have listeners. So this is for Q-Ball and a couple others who are regular listeners of the show. If you are a SharePoint Portal expert, now remember, I'm just going to moderate. If you are a SharePoint Portal guru and you want to participate in an upcoming show that we'll schedule, I want to do a roundtable and it's going to be fun. And I want to learn as much as possible of SharePoint Portal, because that is how I am going to save all of my client information and how I'm going to catalog it and have it searchable. I am going to pay one of my sons to literally scan in all of my manual notes and then merge it with the electronic notes that I have and then get that all stored in a searchable SharePoint portal that's not only accessible here when I'm on site, but when I'm off site at a client, I'll be able to remote in and access that information. Solutions to problems. Just an unbelievable array of things that I'll be able to accomplish and have that at my fingertips. So it's a way I want to leverage Portal, and I know you are going to want that. I know there's a lot of listeners out there who want to hear that. Another couple shows. I own an Amazon Kindle device, and I've now become an expert on that. And you're going to say, well, geez, there's not a lot about it. Well, there's enough for a show. If it's not next week, the week after, I am going to do a show dedicated to the Kindle, giving you my opinion and what I think it's good for and what it's not good for. I'm going to talk about PDFs, my good experience and my bad experience with PDFs. So this is a show, if you are on the bubble of getting a Kindle for a gift or maybe thinking of purchasing it for yourself, you are going to want to hear that, because I have some real opinions on this. And there's something that shocked me. What I like about the Kindle was not what I thought I would like on it. So very, very interesting. And it's not books. You'll have to wait for that. I have a working outline for a show for home networking, so I want to get to that. Last week, I was talking about Windows 7 64-bit, 32-bit printer driver issues, and Red in the chat sent me an email that I read. Well, I got a lot of response to that I'm going to cover here with some email and also some experiences that I had. My client that I did the Windows 7 migration for, they have a half a dozen HP 1320 laser jets. One of the problems after migrating to Windows 7, they couldn't print multiple copies, no matter where they picked it, whether it was in the software, in the properties, when the print menu comes up, they would pick four or five copies. Only one copy would print. This is a common problem. And as I searched and searched and Googled, I found many attempts at a solution, but not the right solution. Until yesterday, I came across a forum where there was an individual who documented, all you have to do is go into the device settings, go down to where the Mopier option is, and disable it. I don't even know what the Mopier option does, but it seems like this option should not be enabled when you have the Windows 7 driver. If you disable that, it instantly fixes the problem. And not only that problem, but other little miscellaneous issues that were happening with the printer, all solved just by disabling that feature in the device settings. So I quickly went around to the half a dozen machines and turned that option off, and I was a hero for my client. I also had to resolve some other issues on a Curacia multifunction device. And it's really playing with the options. And I had to get advice from Heritage Business Systems in the area. They're the ones that support these multifunction devices. And after a conversation with one of their engineers, I worked out the settings that needed to be adjusted on the server drivers for the printer, and then had to reload them to everybody. I had to quickly go around and have everybody, you know, just click on the new driver, load it, and it solved that problem. So yesterday was solving printer problems for Windows 7. So that's a great segue. This is from Curtis, and he says, great show this past week. On show 327, there was a call in about drivers for 32-bit on a 64-bit server. I deal with this on a daily basis, probably 10, 20 times a day. Here's what we do. Install the driver as normal for the 64-bit OS. Then we share the printer so the network can see it. After you type in the name for share this printer, there is a button under it that says additional drivers. Click this button. You will then get a list of what drivers to include. One being Windows 2000 or XP. This is the 32-bit. You can do this vice versa as well. I have some clients that have a 32-bit server and running some 64-bit Windows 7 clients. This is a great solution for Red. After you check off what OS you want to include and click OK, you will get a dialog asking where the drivers are. Just point to where you downloaded and extracted the 32-bit driver, and you will be good. Also, to save a bit of time, you can go to the client workstations, I do this all the time, and run the dialog and type just the server name, /// the server name, and hit enter. You will get a list of the shares from the print server. One of the shares will be your printer. Just double-click the printer and it will connect, or you can just right-click and select connect. You will get a print queue that pops up once it's done. You will be good. Just another tip. We have a lot of clients that upgrade to the latest, greatest printers and have hundreds of clients connected to the server shared printer. After the printer is installed on the server, change the name of the printer to something other than the default. Then, for the share name, make it something unique as well. This way, when the printer is upgraded to the latest and greatest, you simply update the driver using the new driver under the Advanced tab in the printer properties, and the share on the client side does not need to be changed. I did not know that, and that would have saved me time yesterday on what I was doing for repairing the drivers. It just trickles down to the clients. Hope all this makes sense. I'm trying to type this quickly before I have to go see another client. Curtis, great response. Thank you very, very much. This is from Adam. Regarding show 327, your listener with a 32 64-bit print server issue, There's usually no need to run multiple servers, as 2008 64-bit will happily serve clients with x86, x64, and Itanium drivers for your printers. Simply go to the control panel, Printers, Server Properties, open the Drivers tab, and hit Add. You will then be asked to choose which architecture, x86, x64, or IA64, you're providing the driver for, followed by the normal driver selection dialog. When clients connect to the printer, the server will send them the appropriate driver for their OS. Most of the drivers that have support for Vista and 7 are universal across 2000 XP, Vista, and 7. I'm noticing that. Server 2008 has much better print driver handling than 2003 did. So you only have to install one per architecture. There are probably a handful of drivers that will refuse to work, but anything from one of the big providers, HP, Canon, Xerox, etc., should work just fine. Obviously, if there aren't any 64-bit drivers available for a given printer, then this isn't going to help. You still need those to install the printer on the server, but pretty much anything onboard networking from the last 5 years should be fine. Thanks for the show. This is Adam from the UK. This is from Ed. I am a former system admin working in a large classified environment. I love the podcast. Though the enclosed script might interest you, I am going to post this up as a text download in the show notes. As always, never run a script executable that did not come from a source you know. As I don't recall you mentioning a VB script, I am not sure how familiar you are with it. Have someone you know check it out. Post it if you find it interesting. It should be noted that this script operated in an XP environment, so I'm not sure if it will work in more modern environments. We operated several hundred print servers spread over a large area that we're responsible to back up. I wrote this script to back them up. It requires printmig.exe from Microsoft. Once vetted, just rename it to .vbs. Thanks for a great podcast, Ed. Red, I guarantee you are going to want to look at that script and check that out and see if that can help you in backing up all these print drivers. A great idea, Ed. Nice contribution. Thank you. That covers the printers. Give a listen to this voicemail where Alan solved the problem himself, but I have a comment that's going to lead to a Windows 7 tip.
Hello, Mike. This is Alan Nation calling again about my issue with LiveMail. I'm going to recap what went on so you don't have to play the previous message. So I was looking for a way to use the basically picture resizing utility, sending with the right mouse click on a photo and sending that through live mail. And the issue I was running into was it wanted to send it as a album, as a photo album, and I did not want that. I just wanted it as an attachment. So later I found out when I went into gallery that in that live gallery, it has a send with email button up on the top. So you select your pictures, hit send with email, and then it gives you the choices of resizing the pictures, and it attaches them into your email using live mail. So that worked perfect for my client, got that problem solved, and didn't have to look for any more solutions because they were happy to use the gallery, live gallery, to send their email. Thanks, Mike, for a great show. And I look forward to hearing from you every week, all the new information and the great stories you've been given with your experiences as a consultant help me in my business with the consulting I do. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Alan. And his first voicemail was, hey, I got this problem with a client. And then he followed it up later with the solution that he found. And that's great. But when I first heard the issue, it made me think of, is there a way he could just put the email client as a send to? Now, what am I talking about? When you right-click on a file and you can send to. Did you ever want to modify what you send to? Like maybe there's a program that they don't install it and insert it as an option in the shell, but you want to. Well, in Windows 7, I'm going to show you how to do that. And that's one of the tips for tonight. Here's what you first have to do. You have to change folder options because you're not going to see the folder that I want you to see. So if you just click on start and type folder options, then click the view tab. One of my problems that I've always had with every version of Windows, why don't they have the default show hidden files, folders, and drive? I think that's so important. And then hide empty drives in the computer folder? I don't think so. Hide extensions for known file types? No, uncheck that. So I want you to check show hidden files, and I want you to uncheck hide empty drives in the computer folder and uncheck hide extensions. I want to know every extension when I see it. So I do this all the time the first time I sit at a computer because you want to make sure some of these folders that I'm going to take you through to view, you want to make sure they're available. Once you make those checks, click apply and it will be fine. Okay, now open Windows Explorer, not Internet Explorer, Windows Explorer. The shortcut for that is the Windows key E. And if you hit Windows key E, you will then have Windows Explorer. Double click your C drive, then go down to users. Now pick the profile name when you log on. Mine is just Smith MH. Then because we unchecked the view box to be able to view some of these hidden folders, you now can see a folder called App Data. Double click it. Now you're going to have a folder roaming. Click roaming. Scroll down to Microsoft. So we have to find Microsoft. Double click it. Now go to Windows. And now you have the folder send to. When you click send to, these are all of the programs that you can right click. When you right click a file and you have send to, you can now see all of the options. If you put a program in there, like let's say Outlook, you can now send a file to Outlook. And that was going to be my answer to Alan before he answered the question. I was going to say, hey, make sure the Windows Live email client was listed in the send to folder. And then that would create what he was looking for. So I wasn't sure where he was going with that. That is the Windows 7 tip of the night for how to add something to the send to folder. Let's continue. We have some great, great email comments, and that's how we're going to wrap up the show with. This one is from Patrick Boyle, who is a regular listener, and he mentions Sukunia PSI and other update utilities. And he says, this is the personal software inspector, and it's a great tool. It's not stacking another antivirus utility to use it with an antivirus. This tool is the best one I have seen for making sure that a Windows computer has the most current security patches for Windows and all installed software. Version 2 is in beta and has some automatic updating ability in addition to notification. Now, another link that he sent is Mozilla's plugin check, which will check some key non-Windows programs for security updates. This works in Internet Explorer and Firefox. There are several others that will check for updated non-Windows programs, whether they are security-related or not. My favorite is CNET's Tech Tracker. Now, he has a full list that I will try to put most of them in the show notes. And some of them I've heard about, some of them I haven't. Let's go over. He's, of course, Microsoft Windows Update. And then we got Sukunia's OSI. That's the Online Software Inspector, Mozilla's plugin check. Then CNET's Tech Tracker, CleanSoft's Update Notifier, Software Informer, Sumo. That's a software update monitor. Now, FileHippo, I've used that at FileHippo.com. There's an update checker that you can update several programs, many programs, and it will check for the latest upgrade and automatically start upgrading you. Then you have driver updates, where there's the Intel graphics driver updates, driver Max, and of course, driver agent. So Patrick, thank you very much for that. Now, earlier when I was on Skype and I was downloading the voicemail that you heard tonight, Patrick, who sent that email, caught me online and sent me this message. And he says, Mike, I've been meaning to email you this. You talk about KeePass and RoboForm for storing passwords. Well, what's better than both of those? How about LastPass? He says, Steve Gibson has a full review on his podcast number 256 from July 9th, including a transcript. So I will have a link to that. And now we have another program to add to the mix, where I've always talked about KeePass because it's free and I like it. RoboForm costs you money. We talked about that last week, but they are adding some really cool features to RoboForm. But now we also got LastPass, and that's a great recommendation. I have to download that and start using it because I'm a KeePass person myself. And a while ago, I did have RoboForm. I like to try them all out and then see what's best, but LastPass looks like a thumbs up to take a look at. This is from Jerry, and it's about migration of backup and restore. And I'm embarrassed that he sent me a link, Steve, to Steve Cherubino's Podnuts show number 53. And he covers this FABS auto backup in detail. So I am going to have a link in the show notes to Steve Cherubino's show, because they cover the software for being able to back up and restore a profile for someone from going from one system to another. And I could have used a little of that, as you know, as I've been talking about the Windows 7 migration. Thank you, Jerry, for bringing that to my attention that I could share for everybody here. This is from Sean, and he is from Victoria, British Columbia, Canada. And the subject, network diagrams. Hi, Mike. I listen to your podcast all the time while I'm at work. You offer a lot of great information, and I've been very interested in your server migration story. I recently gone through what you experienced, so I know how you feel. My current position involves a lot of network documentation. I have been using Microsoft Visio 2007 for a while now, but I'm wondering if there's anything else out there either you or your listeners use that would make life a little more easy. Keep up the amazing work. Sean, that is a great idea. Now, unfortunately, I use Visio for my network documentation also. It was inexpensive. It has the symbols that I need, and I haven't explored anything else. I know there are more expensive and elaborate network documentation programs. Are there any good open source options? What do you use? What does your network admin use? Send me an email, miketechshow@gmail.com, and let me know if you use something other than Visio and you like it. Give me the pros and cons. How much does it cost? And I will dedicate a segment of an upcoming show to talk about network documentation and options other than Visio. I would be really glad to hear that. Thanks for the question. This is from Jorge, and an IT career guide advice for IT professionals from CIO.com. Just wanted to share this great article with your audience. So this is the IT career guide advice for IT professionals. The link will be in the show notes. This show is going to have an incredible amount of links, so you're going to want to get back to MikeTechShow.com for the show notes for this show that you're listening to. This is from Andrew, also from the UK. Got a lot of UK email here. Restoring an image to the same machine with a different hard drive. I have a question that I would appreciate your opinion on. I bought a PC just over 3 years ago, which came with Vista. When Windows 7 was released, I took advantage of the fact that I work for a local college and bought the student teacher upgrade to Windows 7 Pro 64-bit. After applying the upgrade, I used the built-in function of Windows 7 to make an image onto my external USB hard drive. Great idea. As a matter of fact, Carrie and I did a Tech Vets dedicated to that very topic on how to do that. Recently, when powering on my machine, I got told that Windows needs to check my disk for errors. I let check disk run and often noticed that several files are re-indexed. I know from listening to your show and other similar podcasts that all hard drives eventually fail. It's just a matter of time. I suspect that my drive may fail at any moment. Well, let's stop right there. While your system's working, Crystal Disk Info is very easy. Just Google Crystal Disk Info, download it. There's even a portable version. Run that on any suspected hard drive, and it will tell you right away. It will come up a blue light for everything's good, a yellow warning, hey, things are going bad. That means get another hard drive. And then you got the red light will tell you you got a serious immediate problem. So anything other than the good, if there's a warning or bad, you absolutely want to replace the drive. Run that, and then that'll tell you what's going on. Back to Andrew's comment. I'm shortly going to buy a replacement hard drive, one larger than my current 250 gig one. My question is this: will I be able to restore the image I made of my system onto the new hard drive? Will Windows fail to activate because the hardware configuration is now slightly different, owning to the new hard drive? All other components are the same as when I originally activated Windows 7. I believe you will not have a problem because since you're only changing the hard drive, you have to change more than one component for Windows to scream and say it's got to be reactivated. And another thing I believe, notice I'm using the word believe, that if you haven't activated Windows in the last 30 days, it's going to let you. You're not going to have a problem. That's a great idea. Have the image, Windows image. Now, make sure you make the Windows 7 repair disk. When you make that bootable disk, you can now put your new hard drive in. Now you got your image stored on a USB external drive. You plug that in and you boot with that repair CD, and there's an option to find the image that you have, and it'll restore it. When it's done, you reboot, you take out the disk, unplug the USB, you boot up, and you are done. So it's a very easy process to upgrade to a larger hard drive in Windows 7. They include the tools that we've talked about this. I've talked about it on the Mike Tech Show. We've talked about it on Tech Vets. It is so easy to do a full image of your system and then restore it. So, Andrew, let me know how you make out. So, go straight ahead. I have a big stack of email that we're just going to have to wait to. We're going to have to wait for another time. I want to thank everybody for subscribing and downloading and listening to the podcast. Your constant support. Thank you so very much. And all I ask, as now there's no more sponsors on the Mike Tech Show, check out my affiliate links. Go to MikeTechShow.com. Check out the affiliate links. You'll see the Amazon link. If you make a purchase on the Amazon link, that will make a donation to the Mike Tech Show. Also, you have Steve Cherubino's videos, the great laptop repair videos. You have videos on how to build your website. There's a buy.com if you purchase from buy.com. And also, don't forget the GoDaddy link. And then the ever important link on the right-hand side, which is the donation button. And I really appreciate all of your support for the show. I thank you so very much. I will be back at normal time next Thursday night. Same time, same channel. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.